This is RSB and the Update, episode 632, recorded Friday, August 18th, 2017. Headset expansions. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for RSBNB Update. A little bit late on the recording schedule here this week, but nonetheless, hopefully it'll be well worth it. The RR Man is back this week.
Good to see you.
And also joining us, a relic of RSBNB and RSBNB Update history, is Brad, a.k.a. Chief Snake. Welcome back.
Ahoy, hoy. This makes me sound really old. I'm not... sure if I appreciate being called a relic.
Well,
I think you're the youngest here.
Relic.
Yeah.
Relic in terms of the podcast. We're continuing on with the New Zealand theme, as you guys can see.
New Zealand month.
I don't know who we're going to get next week, but we'll just have to wait and see if we can make it three in a row. But
I think you've got most of us. You've had most of us on already.
Yeah, aren't there only like four of you guys in that country or something like that?
I think so. Five on a good day.
Wow, okay.
We all look after the sheep.
Yeah.
They still outnumber you guys 12 to 1?
I think they reduced, but there's still a lot of them around.
Okay. All righty. Well, we're not talking about New Zealand sheep. We are here to talk about RuneScape, of course, and this week's RS update is the skilling outfits in minigames and the community design chat box. So the skilling outfits, there's not much to report on here because primarily these outfits have already been put in game before, but many people wanted them in game through actual gameplay methods because, as we all know, previously you'd only be able to get them on Treasure Hunter. Which, of course, for anyone who's just joining us after being absent for 10-plus years, I'm not pointing fingers at you, Brad, because you've been around since then. That is, of course, the microtransaction method in-game that can bring you items that are sometimes monetarily broken and give you an unfair advantage. So, but in any case, the artisan's outfit...
Monetarily broken, that's such a scathing comment.
Well,
to
make
it passing.
Well, I mean, there was a case last year. I don't want to dredge this up, but there's a case last year where someone who spent a huge amount of money on one of the Treasure Hunter promotions and maxed out an account in the entire weekend. So some of them are monetarily broken, but the vast majority of them are okay. But anyways, the artisan outfit, which is, of course, for the crafting skill, you can get from the Stealing Creation reward shop. Another reason to go play Stealing Creation, I think. I don't know what the current state of this minigame is.
Whoa. Hold the phone. Was there ever a reason to play Stealing Creation?
Oh, the scathing comments. Just keep
this
on coming.
This is news to me. No, I do. I mean, no, that's not entirely true.
Well, the double XP for mining and whatnot, right? And construction, the hammers.
Yeah.
Speaking of relics,
people still do that? yeah. Right. Like, no, this actually seems. Did Stealing Creation kind of like go away, and then people realized it was still good, and they started playing it again? I don't know. I always just found it was something that was super boring.
Yeah, they basically had to add in the minigame spotlight, where every couple of days the minigame spotlight changes and you can go play that minigame, get a universal currency, and then spend that currency on Stealing Creation points or Castle Wars points. It all depends on where you want to focus. So minigames on the whole are less played nowadays. So this kind of gives another reason for people to go play these individual ones, Stealing Creation, for the crafting set. The next one doesn't come from a mini game. It's the blacksmith's set, and that comes from the Artisan's Workshop, which is the little smithing activity in Falador, which still can net some pretty good smithing XP as you're leveling up without too much of a cost for you. Botanist outfit comes from the Flash Powder Factory reward shop. Can you guys remember the last time you played Flash Powder Factory?
Probably never.
I've never heard of it.
Yeah, I mean, I can't count the times I did Flash Powder Factory, so. Next up, the farming outfit comes from the Cabbage Face Punch Bonanza minigame, which of course started off as a spring Easter slash April Fool's event a number of years ago. So you can get the farming outfit right there. Fletching outfit also comes from the Stealing Creation Workshop, and the Nimble Navigator Agility outfit comes from the Pit, which is a random D&D that you can get after completing an agility course.
So, oh, that's quite nice.
Yeah.
That one's not too bad because you just get it while you're doing normal agility.
Yeah, they're all pretty novel. I think Stealing Creation one, you'll probably need to wait for that's on Spotlight unless you can find a good Stealing Creation clan to go with, because I know that is something that
that
required focus back in the day, and given the Spotlight system, it probably still does. So, but all in all, I think it's a good focus to get back to minigames because just look at the legacy mini games in game Fishing Trawler, Castle Wars, and Trouble Brewing. When was the last time someone went to go play one of these mini games for fun, or even for something XP related? Right. So
yeah, exactly.
They're really not played anymore.
Do I have to be a member to play the Cabbage Face Punch Bonanza?
No, you do not. I don't believe so, because it is in a free to play area, and it was once a holiday event. But the reward items for it might
actually
be.
It's been moved.
Oh, it has.
It's in the Gamer's Grotto now.
Oh, so maybe that is the case. No, it is free to play.
It says it's free to play on the
free to play
mini game. RS Wiki.
Yeah. So, I mean,
interesting.
You definitely could. Definitely could.
That was actually quite enjoyable. That game.
Yeah,
I played it for a little while.
It wasn't a huge abomination of farming like Livid Farm was. So,
does this mean that these outfits are quite easy to get now, or are they still very expensive?
Well,
Because I mean, otherwise it's basically just up to luck, isn't it?
Right. Previously, that's what it would have been, but now there's a set price behind them, and it's nothing that a little bit of grinding can't solve. Entirely sure what the exact prices are, Jagex. It would have been a nice idea to have that included in the news posting, I think.
And are these permanent?
Yes, of course, they are permanent.
And this is the first time that they've ever made these permanently available, I guess?
Well, permanently available that you can always get, yeah. Otherwise, you would have to wait for something like Vic the Trader to come around and trade in XP. But no, you can now get them in-game. Let's see, how much of a reward for Cabbage Face Punch? I'm going to try and find that right now. But in the meantime,
look, it looks like 800 points. But I don't know how long it takes to get 800 points. It sounds like a lot.
Well, to get the for example, let's see. Passive abilities, Gorilla Dash, 275. So it's definitely one of the higher up ones, and I mean, and at least this is a soloable event in the terms of Cabbage Face Punch. So that's a good thing.
So get out there, do Shane proud, and get the farmer's outfit, everybody.
Yeah, it's a plus 6% XP on anything you're farming. So when you combine that with all the earn updates for farming recently, you can really amp up that farming XP that you're getting on a full tree run and whatnot. So, and for anyone wondering, apparently the next spotlight for the Cabbage Face Punch will be on September 4th, so a couple weeks away. But I don't know. There's no amount of reward points here that you would have to get. But I think overall this is a good thing to do because, you know, these outfits aren't on their own aren't necessarily too overpowered, unlike the elite outfits that you can get, which you have to make with invention. So it's about time that they brought this in, because, I mean, who can argue with an extra 6% agility or farming XP, right? So,
exactly.
All in all, a good move, and I think the players wanted this one. And it kind of blunts that treasure hunter sword for people who don't like that mini game. So
until they sharpen it next weekend, am I right?
well, let's just wait and see on that.
Let's just have a good week.
That's right. We had a good week last week, and we're having a good week thus far, right?
Well, yeah. Those hydric lamps seem a bit overpowered.
Yes,
hydro lamps or whatever they're called. Sorry.
Okay, so the community design chat box is here. You guys will recall a number of months ago they changed the chat box, and the community did not like the way the chat box looked. They removed a bunch of buttons and they added a drop down on the right hand side where you would have to click and you would modify all the settings from in that chat box. So what they have done is they have basically provided us three ways of displaying the chat box right now. The first way is to have it the way it was right before this update, with a filter for the various filter options in chat and a cog to adjust the various chat settings. The next way is to have it how it's been since RS3 came out, with having all of the icons on the chat bar, which is a little overwhelming if you ask me. I don't know what you guys think.
Yep.
And then the third way is you can hide everything completely, and it provides for a really nice compact view of how the chat is. So I really haven't had a chance to look too much into this, and I was actually saving it for doing this live on the show because I wanted to show how exactly confusing this could potentially be when you're looking at chat, because let's just face it, chat in RuneScape is a core mechanic of the game, and if we're going to have this chat box here, it should at least be very usable by everyone, right? So, okay.
There is a lot going on this week.
Yeah, there is. I mean, I'm trying to figure out here exactly what all of the buttons do in the cog, first and foremost. So, we have a filter menu that drops down, and you have options to filter local, private, friends, clan chat, etc. Then in your cog, which is immediately to the right of that, you can filter online status, your always on mode for chat, the profanity filter, report abuse, your examine settings, clear chat, and then a switch chat mode button. So that is the default option as of this week. What do you
guys? Well, that's interesting, because mine actually defaulted to the other version, like the old school way it was.
Oh.
Odd.
Okay. Maybe I clicked around earlier in the week and I just did that. I don't know. But
I'm not a fan of this drop down, eh? So I press I like the bar above it.
And
it's gross. Like, I agree.
There is no way to make this drop down disappear.
You just move the mouse away and then it eventually does.
Oh,
but
okay.
That's weird. I don't like it.
But it's hit the switch chat modes button.
Okay, switch chat mode. And now
I'm scared. Will I dream?
I have the one.
What does it do?
I have the one with everything in the top bar. Is that what you guys are on right now?
Yeah, this is nice. And then if you press the little minimize to the side, that just goes away and you can bring it back. So I think this is the way to go. That drop down menu's ugly.
Yeah. Okay. And
oh, okay. All right.
And then
Now we're talking.
I'm really confused. What was this? Sorry, I got completely lost. What was this like previously?
It was like all of the icons on the chat bar.
It had all the icons.
It had all the icons previously. And that's what they changed away from.
Okay. Admittedly, I think that's too confusing with all of the icons.
Yeah, me too. Me too. And I was happy when they changed
it. You can hide them.
Yeah, now you can. But previously, if you click switch chat mode, we had the little filter button. And
yeah,
that's what we had, and everything was controlled through that, and that's the part people didn't like.
Oh, okay. I mean, that's okay, but I guess it means that... Oh, no, that actually does work okay. It's nice being able to see what all of the icons mean up front.
Yes.
Well, I suppose I don't mind hovering over them, though.
As someone who's just come back to the game after like many years and has never taken the time to actually look at the chat box properly, because I don't care about talking to other people, I value those labels being just immediately
right. And you know, the fact it says current setting on is really helpful, because I mean, who's to know what they look like, right? Like, take the online diamond right now. If it's gold, that means that you're online to everyone. Blue is for friends only, and gray is offline.
Brad's favorite option, gray.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't hide from the listeners. Don't hide from the listeners. That's my motto. But I don't know. And
I don't know if I agree with this, to be honest.
Yeah.
I don't
tell us
like
why.
The idea of just giving more modes for things.
Right.
They need to take more of an Apple approach and just figure out what works best and stick with that. Which, you know, to be honest, is probably neither of these. And this is, I'm saying this as someone who does not like Apple products, but I understand what they're trying to do in terms of user experience. So.
Yeah. And, you know, that's something that we have talked about before, is that the vast majority of these ninja fixes that come into game and the responses that come into game regarding these ninja fixes, they are filtered through the player base. And the question is, how many of the player base actually want these changes? And this is something that Jagex said they were going
to
work
on. I can understand that. I can understand why, well, especially why you just wouldn't want this to change after becoming used to it for so long. And it makes sense to have those icons like in a little like toolbar there where you can just quickly toggle them on and off and they're up front like that. But at the same time, like, Jagex need to understand, and the players also need to understand, that this needs to be visible in a way that new players are going to understand it. So, you know, new players come into the game and they look at the toolbar and it's like, what the hell is going on here? Like,
right.
There's just so many options. Why would I need this many options in a chat?
All right.
Hiding them behind a menu kind of makes sense, but also it doesn't in a few different ways. I don't know. But then giving both of those options, that's just the worst of both worlds, in my opinion. It's, you know, that's, you know, another option that a new player is going to have to look at, and it's just going to be overwhelming to them that that's even there. So I have problems with this, but
and see that was going to be the initial discussion point around this chat box update, is that, you know, it's in game, and the question is, are we really at the point where we're having toggles for the chat box, because we can't agree as a community
on what is the best
way of doing chat?
This is probably a very small thing in the scheme of things, but
I think it really
like speaks to the mentality that they have at the moment.
Yeah. And, you know, we've been saying this for a while. You know, Jagex has the smarts. They have the people behind them. I'm sure that there is a proper way of designing this chat box, and they know which option they would want, but they want the community to be able to play the game however they want. So, I don't know. I think I honestly prefer it minimized. That kind of goes back to a simpler RuneScape 2 style of interface. That's what I prefer. Yeah. Now, another question, of course, that we have to ask with everything going forward is, how do these menus work when it comes to the mobile game next year?
Gosh. I can't wait to see what a crap show that's going to be.
I mean, I don't think it's going to be bad personally, but I just think that using a menu like this in a mobile game is going to be really difficult for the chat.
Yeah, of course.
Because if you imagine you have a small screen, say a 5-inch phone screen, and you have these little icons for chat, how are you going to be able to choose which one you're going to focus on?
Mm. So bring me up to speed here. Have they given us any other previews of what's to come
in
the mobile version of the game?
No.
I mean, all I remember hearing is that it's going to be the same game.
No, we just know it's pre-alpha right now.
Right. And if it is going to be the same game, how the hell are these menus meant to work? I'm trying really hard to refrain from swearing here. I don't understand.
So it's bloody amazing, eh? That's
what
I mean.
Intrigued.
It's going to be crazy. I want to see it just to see it burn.
yeah.
I honestly don't know about the menus, and that's my biggest concern about the UI.
Like, there are buttons in this game that are smaller than anything I've ever seen in any other game before. Like, I'm just looking right now at the action bar type. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, there's like a minimized little checkbox. Like,
minimize button. I'm sorry. I've done it already.
Look how small that is.
That is ridiculous. Donkulous.
Actually, to be fair, that's so small, I didn't even realize that was a thing. What does that even do?
Right?
Oh, wow. It's that, I don't know why you'd want that, but it hides the action buff like icons. Huh.
You learn something new every day.
You do, yeah.
I mean, that and like all of the other close buttons on any of the other interface.
Well, to be fair, do you have your interface set to be compact? Slim headers,
probably.
The slim headers option, right?
Yeah. I don't know. It's always so long between when I play this game. I'm just like, oh, this is the way it's always been. I guess maybe I have customized a few things here and there.
I don't know.
You're going to need...
It's going to be a big concern going forward, and, you know, I can see doing this for a pure desktop game to have changes like this for chat, but when it comes down to it, this is going to be a huge problem next year with mobile. So
I don't know. I mean, maybe they've got a plan. Maybe they're just going to
maybe
change all their interfaces or something.
And you know,
we got to have Brad back when that comes out. That would be amazing.
Interested. Yeah, like I don't care about the game right now. I have not played in a long time and don't plan to, but it's, I'm genuinely interested to see how the hell they pull this off.
I agree. It's going to be a very interesting time, and it's something I think that if we're going to be having a successful mobile launch, they need to start focusing in on now on refining these interfaces. Like, if you refine the chat box, refine the interface now so it'll be usable on a smaller screen. And maybe that was their initial goal, because if you go back...
That's kind of the weirdest thing, right? Like, they're still doing development like that and still making these tiny UI elements that you'd have no hope of clicking.
Because if you go back to if you go back to the one with the filter icon and the cog, you effectively have two context menus here that you could easily expand out for mobile. And you could tap on those a lot easier than you could tap on an icon. So maybe that was the whole impetus for doing this change, was a mobile style update. But
I don't know. Maybe we need to give them the benefit of the doubt. Maybe they've already thought this through.
Yeah, I think they have, and I think that the design we initially got was for mobile, and the players on the desktop wanted it to be how it was before, so hence the toggle back to something similar. So I am 100% willing to give Jagex the benefit of the doubt, and I think they need that given the way some of the recent projects have gone, i.e. Metaphos. So anyways... That's the chat box. Anything else on the chat box? I know. It seems such a mundane thing to be discussing, a chat box, but here we are.
Yeah, we better move on.
Alrighty. So moving on from that then.
Hashtag fake news.
I wouldn't go that far. I wouldn't go that far.
This is just what we were discussing in the pre-show, just kind of discussing how some of the updates in the past have been so light that Shane thought he was making up fake news. I think we did a good job of teasing this one out.
Yes, we did. So speaking of teasing things, patch notes this week. Lots of interesting little tidbits here, including some free-to-play improvements, specifically to the Demon Slayer quest. The guidance in the Trial of Faith in the Silverlight Crypt has been improved for anyone who is doing Demon Slayer. I haven't done Demon Slayer in years, so I have no idea of what that means in the modern incarnation of the quest. Also, dying in either crypt is now considered a safe death, which is something that they did in a lot more of the recent quests, was bring in the option to have a safe death, because, you know, no one really wants to be doing a quest and dying unless it's, you know, something like Sliske's Endgame or Nomad's Elegy, right? So, auto loot is no longer introduced during the quest. Oh boy, thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Skeletons and cultists during the quest no longer drop bones, and Gideon Bed's combat level has been removed. Not entirely sure what that's referring to, but all right. I'm guessing...
Combat level has been removed.
Yeah, so maybe
it's
just...
Is this like a non-combat NPC or something? Or
it might just be something that you just have to kill for a certain amount of time, but...
I mean, I guess it is only Demon Slayer. Maybe the combat level is meant to scale with your own or something like that.
Yeah, that would make sense, I think. Here's another one that, you know, you just got to kind of scratch your head as to wonder how this happened, but the friends list and friends chat dividers will once again remember their positions upon logging in.
Speaking about fake news, this actually happened to me again just today. So this isn't fixed.
Really? I have seen that it's fine on mine. Yeah. So is it
every once in a while it would just do it, eh? And it just, I logged in today and it did it again. So.
All right.
Must be something difficult.
The transparency has been lowered on the Dungeoneering map, and a colored border has also been added around the Dungeoneering map to help it stand out. And continuing on with the map will now automatically update the player markers when teleporting to any gatestone or when the home teleport is used. So they're effectively dynamic sizing the Dungeoneering map and I guess just making it a little bit less intrusive and pop out a bit on the screen, hence the transparency in the border.
I didn't actually get down there to check it. Did you go and check the mini game to see how the map was?
No, I don't do Dungeoneering unless I absolutely have to.
Yeah, I need to go and have a look because that map sounds really cool now.
Yeah, I think that was a Mod Shawnee temporary project or something like that that he was working on his own.
Is this the map that they're talking about?
The map in Dungeoneering. Previously, you would have to close it to get it to update. Now it updates dynamically.
I don't even know if I am familiar with this at all.
Oh,
what is life?
I've got 91 Dungeoneering, and I don't know what this is.
How did you manage that?
I don't know. Maybe I would know it if I saw it, but I don't know.
Buying floors.
To be fair, I got most of that from Sinkholes.
Oh, okay. But, fair enough. Fair enough. Sinkholes is great.
Yeah.
Plague jackets and trousers can now be stored in a keepsake box because everyone wants to look like the mourners from Biohazard. So. I just love these little nuggets that come in the patch notes every week who are going into quests from 2003 and whatnot, you know, because there's obviously the person out there who wants to wear these around as a cosmetic override. So
That's one guy.
I should go do that. That would be a good Halloween costume, I think. Invention junk refiners can now be used all in one and will adjust to display how many components a player can receive based on charges and junk available. All right. So kind of getting ahead of ourselves there for the next batch of invention update when that arrives. So that's good. I should probably make some junk refiners. I haven't done that since invention first came out. So the Wilderness Sword 4 can now be reclaimed from Mr. X in Edgeville for 100k GP. Previously, you used to have to go to Collodion all the way up north in the magic bank there in level 55 wilderness to reclaim the sword if you lost it, which I don't think is too big of a deal because you just go to Ardoin and use that wilderness teleport lever, right? And then run through there.
Yeah. I assume you can get it from the wilderness guy for free.
Yes, you can get it from him for free if you don't want to pay Mr. X. Now, here's one people have been asking for a while. The Twitch tab on the social media interface has been removed when using the NXT client.
What is the social interface?
Basically, how you talk to other people in RuneScape.
Oh.
Yes.
It's got the polls and it's got the
chat
high scores
and the community and everything.
Like that thing.
Yes. And, you know, Twitch, they had Twitch integration built into the Java client, but they weren't able to build it into NXT. So it's just been sitting there, unable to be used. So they removed it from NXT. The Menopo's VIP area has been added to the skill portal locations in the Max Guild teleports. So, okay, that's good. I don't know who Maxed would want to go train in Menopo's, but it's an option, I guess.
Man, the burns keep on coming.
Well, I mean, it's true. If you're maxed, why would you need to go train at a level 60 fishing area?
Well, I'll tell you, the wood cutting, doing the wood cutting is a really good way to get simple parts.
All right. And plus, I was unfair because if you crystallize Acadia, that's the best wood cutting XP in the game.
Did not know that. That is
so
cool.
So, Menopause is good for that. Oh, and another reason you might also want to go up there, the Menopause Cactus Patch can also be accessed by this area as well.
Of course.
So farming. Yes, farming. You can now get those extra cactus spines or potato cactus through doing that. So, yeah, well, there's a reason to max, I guess, to get access to the max guild and have these teleports.
That's so handy.
Not saying I'm going to do that or anything, but hey, it seems to be the in thing that everyone is doing these days.
I think you're a bit behind there, Shane.
Yeah, probably a couple.
When are you going to max? Are you ever going to max?
I have done some calculations that if I just keep going through attrition, I will be maxed by the end of 2018.
All right.
Are you serious?
We're on.
Yeah, like not even trying to train skills, just doing dailies and quests and whatnot and doing what I need to do. I'm pretty sure I'll be maxed by the end of 2018.
I mean, that's a ballsy calculation. You're only talking about 99s.
99s, right. Yes.
Okay.
And I mean, you just do a challenge.
What about invention?
That includes probably invention to 120 as well. If I want
120?
Or sorry, 99. I mean, if I wanted to do that. Oh, okay.
Who wants to put money on this?
I don't think that would be a good idea to bet on that, but
that's pretty. No, I reckon you could actually do that, to be honest.
Oh, I could probably get it done by the end of 2017 if I wanted to, but I'm not going to be putting that much effort into it, you know.
Ooh, your invention is very low.
Yeah,
very low.
Oh, but I say very low. You got 12 million experience.
That but this is the skill that people, you know, can level up very quickly, and all it would really need would be some fishing at the waterfall place if I wanted to do that. The Elf City waterfall.
So. That blasphemy.
Right.
Yeah. The Skeletal Horror can now be reset using weekly D&D tokens. You guys will recall that the Skeletal Horror is the creature that can drop an Elite Clue Scroll. So there's another free Elite Clue Scroll per week there if you wanted to do that. Now here's one that I think was a good change that they made. The Rune Metrics telemetry option is no longer displayed by default when quick loading a predefined interface layout. So this was on by default with the RS2 and RS3 defaults, and Rune Metrics on its own, you really don't get too much with it. So it seemed as though it was trying to kind of upsell people to a pro version of Rune Metrics here, but the fact they disabled it, I think, is a good option. So,
right.
Happy about that. During the Ithil, Voice of Saren Clay rocks will no longer deplete. Moving on to some free player changes now. Free players can now ask Wizard Jalarast in the Wizard's Tower to make split bark armor with the correct ingredients.
This is cool.
Along with this, hollow bark, fine cloth, and snake skin and hide are now tradable by free players. And split bark armor is now equipable and tradable by free players, as well as snakeskin armor, Turoth boots, and basilisk boots are also all equipable and tradable by free players. And
that
finally,
sounds like it probably makes sense. Yeah. I mean, is split bark armor actually any good post EOC?
No, it's very. I think it's level 30 or 40 armor. So
right, because it has always been fairly useless since like Mystic came out.
Right, and even Mystic, I think, is around level 50 or 60. So
yeah, so I mean, it probably makes sense to bring it over to free to play. Like, what else did free to play have
exactly
in terms of magic armor?
I mean, we'll just go with this one here. But the crossbows and the bolts up to rune can now be equipped and used by free to play players, unless they're locked behind members' content. This is just basically opening up more of combat to free-to-play, which is something that they definitely need to do. Because
yeah, I mean, it kind of doesn't make sense that, like, rune arrows, rune bolts, for instance, are... they're just talking about bolts, aren't they?
Yeah, but the arrows and whatnot were free-to-play already.
I mean, it kind of doesn't make sense that rune bolts aren't... okay.
So...
yeah, I guess I was just wondering if there was a balanced triangle on free-to-play, essentially.
Yeah, and see, that's the thing. This is for stuff that's all under level 50, and you want the game to kind of feel like it is indeed a free-to-play game and not trying to upsell you to the member's version in that, oh, we're walking through free-to-play here, and we're having these bolts that I can't use, or this armor that is in the guide, but, oh, if I was a member at level 30, we could wear this. And same thing goes with the Cabbage Face Punch Bonanza. The fact that's free to play is really good. Gives players a taste of what's available. So all of these changes here, I think, are well overdue and long needed, because you want RuneScape to still feel like the free to play game it always has been. So this accomplishes that. And what's more, they made some EOC combat abilities made available for use on free worlds, though they don't say which ones. So, once again, very good. And the final one is that players can now use the price checker to check the prices of members' items. Which, I mean, I don't know why you would have one, but anyways. So, and, you know, I see these free-to-play changes this week as not, you know, just a way of bringing more free-to-play people to the game, but I see this as potentially getting ready for next year's mobile launch and having a bunch of new players coming into the game who are going to need equipment and whatnot, and you want to have a, you know, a diverse experience for them. So
yeah, that's a good point.
So, I mean, obviously they are thinking about this behind the scenes, and anyone who is a member will see this and just kind of gloss over, but in the scheme of things, it's really huge. So
it'll be interesting to see how many more free-to-play updates they have before then.
Yeah.
Go up a bit.
Yeah, indeed.
I like that they are doing little things like allowing free players to do price checks on members' items, because that always really annoyed me in the game previously. If you were a member and then you let your membership lapse and you became a free player again, and then you had all these members' items in your bank and you couldn't even see what they were because the titles were all just members' object or something. They've obviously changed that now, so they show you what they are. But yeah, doing just opening up like the price checker to things like that. It's just you know, making the game more well rounded.
Yeah, very good.
There's a good.
That's probably, you know, the patch note of the week, maybe even the patch note of the month. We'll have to see what else we
get. You reckon?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
You know, toggles aside, we were kind of hard on the toggle chat, but this really, I think, kind of shows the care that they put into the game, which is always nice to see. So, all right. So, hidey holes for emote clue scrolls. RR Man, you brought this to my attention, and we're going to be getting a poll on this coming Monday. So, based on what you see here, what are you thinking so far?
Seems awesome, eh? Really going to help get those lower level clues, get me back into those ones instead of just elites.
Yeah. Basically, what we're talking about here is that we've mentioned this before. It really only makes sense for someone who doesn't want to be bothered to do only elite clue scrolls, because if you wanted to do mediums or hards, you would need to have a supply of treasure trail items that you wear when you go do an emote. And you would have to carry these from the bank to and from whenever you were doing one of these clue scrolls. And it just added a certain amount of time to it. And it was really annoying. So this is a part of the clue scroll rework project. And they're calling it Stash. That's the internal code name for it, originally just referred to as hidey holes. This is kind of like what old school got. And they are basically bringing in the old school update that is an old school RS to RS3 with this, if players accept it in the poll. So the name is Stash, which stands for store things and stuff here units. And they're basically little marked boxes, crates, rocks, or trees that you would find throughout the world when you're doing a clue scroll. And then you would left click that once it's been filled, and you would just get the items that you need right out of there. So basically, they're going to be near the emote clue coordinates, and they say this will free up to 94 bank spaces within your bank because of all the potential items that you could need when you're doing a clue scroll. 94 items.
94. Wow. That is so many.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
That's substantial. There's going to be varying construction level requirements to build them, and you're going to get a certain amount of construction XP once you build them. And, you know, I can't help but feel that this is also a neat little way of bringing construction to the surface world and kind of diversifying the construction skill at the same time, which we all know construction needs a major rework. just like many of the other skills in the game, mining and smithing. So,
can I just ask the obvious question here? If they are developing things like this, which take up a lot of developer time, presumably, and also, you know, like increase the complexity of the game, increase the storage requirements and things, because they're creating these things that you can stash items into. Why wouldn't they just give people more bank space, which would presumably be a lot easier to do?
There's a very good reason to that. We're supposed to be getting a bank rework at some point in the future. The bank rework is in a design phase right now, but there's only 4 people in all of Jagex who know how the existing bank code works, and they're tied up with other projects. So that's why we're waiting for a bank rework right now.
Right. I did actually hear that.
So we're going to be getting more bank spaces in the future, but this is just kind of a quality of life update for Treasure Trails, really. And I assume they'll be able to handle the storage requirements behind it. And, you know, there's going to be an interface also to see what you've already discovered and filled in. And it's going to be able to be filtered by the various tiers of clue scroll. And as you can see here, if you look at the tab, one day we're probably going to have the master tier of clue scroll, which is something that was teased. So this is going to require a 75% threshold to pass. It's going to be going into an in-game poll on Monday. Now, I do hope that they promote this dev blog when the poll goes live, because where did you see this? You were just searching the forums, right?
Yeah, I was just trolling through, trying to find something for the show.
Yeah. And, I mean, I like to think I keep a pretty close track on Jagex Twitter. It wasn't tweeted, as far as I know. And, you know, this is the kind of thing I think that will ultimately deserve a front page news post when this poll goes live, because you want to make sure people are going to read it before voting in it. So, but anyways, I can't think of anything that would be wrong with this, and I don't see it failing to pass. I think we're going to see another 85% plus threshold here for this vote on Monday when it happens. So, nonetheless, going to be pretty interesting to see how it looks when it comes in with the clue scroll rework. And this is all, of course, part of going back to the roots and fixing up the game, unfinished business, as it were. So, anyways.
Well, the bottom of this post has the final poll text.
Okay.
And it does actually, they are going to mention the recent blog, but I don't know if they'll put a link in or not. But
oh, they probably will. They probably will. We've considered a number of potential methods for how to make emote clues a smoother experience without removing their requirements, and have decided that stash units, as detailed in our recent blog, are the best way forward. If this poll passes, that's what we'll do. Else, we'll pull one of our other solutions. Does this sound good? So,
does this sound good?
So if it doesn't pass, we're going to have another poll. Okay. I don't know.
I assume it will.
Yeah, I mean, I assume it will, but that's a topic for another day if it doesn't pass, I guess. So,
interesting how much they've fleshed this out.
Yeah.
Without actually...
Well, they basically stole it from old school.
Yeah, it's already been built in old school.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, you did say that. Yeah.
That's still going to be a lot of work, because you have to fill each one separately, yeah.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, every one of these things is going to need 94 items. Oh man!
Let's hope not. I think that's a very far way of taking things. But, and this kind of leads into the next thing we wanted to talk about here is see if you have an opinion, Brad, on the pivot away from large expansion type updates and going back to standard RS. You know, of a weekly update or maybe 2 or 3 updates a month, rather than just one every 3 months. And the clue scroll rework is one of the things that came from that as part of the unfinished business strategy. So what do you think? Do you think that they need to be
like,
on
this is a unique kind of thing that I think I can comment on as someone who doesn't actually care about RuneScape anymore, but Yeah, no offense, but I am a software developer, so I understand the software development life cycle and what they're going through to come to this conclusion that monthly updates are better than big updates and things like that. So, I mean, at the core of it, I really like the idea, because I can relate to it. I really like the idea of going back to a shorter cycle, shorter iterations.
Yeah. Expansion one took them nine months to develop.
Small tweaks. Yeah, so I mean, as a player as well, I mean, I can just say, not that I've properly played the game in a long time, but when I did play the game, I didn't give a shit about those kinds of updates. I mostly just wanted the game to work better, you know. And they've got to a point now that they've got the NXT client and everything. To be honest, it's very impressive. It's a lot better. It's a massive improvement over what we had previously. And if they had spent more time working on things like that, rather than increasing the amount of content in the game, because the amount of content in the game is incredibly vast, and I don't know who would ever, you know, the minigames, for instance. Why would you build more minigames, which they've obviously realized now to some extent. But
right, they got to get the existing minigames working and get people playing them again.
Yeah, so I mean, coming back to the developer standpoint again, this to me really makes sense, and it hits home because as a developer in the company that I previously worked for, I felt that they spent way too much time investing in new features, and they just left the old features to rot, and they just sat there. That was a problem for users as well as for the other developers, because the other developers, much like the bank code base in RuneScape, the other developers just would never have the opportunity to get up to speed on how something like that worked, and it would never get improved either. And that's a real problem for maintenance going forward. You need to actually bring your code up to date, you know, in modern standards. I can only assume that the bank is either written very poorly or, you know, written in an old horrible language or something that no one wants to use. I don't know what the structure of RuneScape is these days, but
yeah.
You might know more than I do about that.
You know, we don't. And we just know it's lots of very rough code going back to 2004.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's only four
people left in the company who know how the bank works.
Yeah, so. I mean, a lot of stuff has changed in the world since 2004, and a pretty significant amount has changed in software development since then in general. So, I mean, for me as a user and a developer, I think this makes sense on a lot of levels. Do you guys care about massive updates?
You know, it really depends on the update. And at this point, I think when we're talking about massive updates, the massive updates that I want to see personally are the mining and smithing rework and the construction rework.
Yeah. And like, I mean, I can understand and support things like that. They're definitely worth doing. You've got to invest time in things like that because they, I mean, especially things like mining and smithing, they are more... I mean, they're reworks more than actually making new content, for one thing, which to me is easier to justify. But also, it kind of makes sense to be doing that kind of stuff alongside making sure that you're doing general maintenance on the rest of the game and tweaks and fixes and things.
And so
something that, for instance, as a developer, something that I really wanted in my previous company is for us to just have a dedicated team. Like a ninja team, not unlike a ninja team.
Yeah. Well, they doubled the size of the ninja team with their reversal last month. So,
right, yeah.
Here's how it came down. We recorded the show on a Thursday, and then on Friday morning, we get this news post, unfinished business, all future expansions canceled. We gathered the group back together again and record a 35-minute addendum to the podcast. That's only happened once before. And, you know, we get this massive news post that expansions are off and we're going back to our roots and we're doing standard updates and we're going to focus on what needs to be fixed in the game. And, you know, I think it was probably a huge moment of internal realization for them with that. And I think a lot of the player base were really happy about that.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and, you know, Unfinished Business includes so many updates that everyone's wanted for a really long time. Mining and smithing.
That to me kind of embodies everything about old school RuneScape, right? Like, that's kind of what people wanted. They didn't care about all this new content that they were putting in the game. They just wanted it to be like it was
before. 2007.
And that's kind of, like, that's somewhat how I feel as well, except I also want it to look nice and, you know, right. Not be a tiny little...
A tiny little screen.
Which I don't know. They've actually changed that now, haven't they?
Have they? I don't know. I don't keep up with old school.
Sorry, I don't know. I just thought that they had... Don't know.
I don't know. You know, some of the updates that were talked about in Unfinished Business were the clue scroll overhaul, which we just finished talking about, mining and smithing, daily scape reductions so people don't have to feel the burden to log in every day to complete things, invention badge 2. Back in April, they brought out a new achievement system that really, really had a rough user interface around that. So they're redoing that. That's supposed to come out next week or the week after. An Evil Dave quest, graphical reworks of Sears Village and the Witch's House, and improvements to minigame Shattered Worlds. So, I mean, yeah, they are doing this in a big way. And I think your experience on that, you hit the nail on the head, that when you were playing, you wanted the game to just run better, and you really weren't that confused about huge headlining content all the time, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, okay. Well, that's a good perspective to have. And... you know, 9 months for an expansion when the rest of the game can't get ninja fixes or get other updates, the game starts to suffer, and Jagex admitted that. So, overall, it was a good choice to make. All right, we just got a couple of other little RS things before we move on to our discussion topic of the week. They have revealed the RuneFest stage schedules for September's RuneFest event in London. They're going to be starting off at 11 a.m. focusing on RuneScape Mobile. Then they're going to be having a streamer and YouTube Q&A for people who stream content on RS. Then Old School gets a slot on the main stage at 1 o'clock. RuneScape reveals, then the Golden Gnomes, and then a couple of tournaments and a little... quiz/event where they turn the lights off in the room and you play a game together. That's going to be interesting. Then on the secondary stage, art and audio showcase at noon, RuneScape skilling at 1 o'clock, once again on the secondary stage.
Second stage.
Old school quiz at 2 p.m. RuneScape combat at 4:30, also on the second stage, which is called the circus stage this year, I might add. And then at 5:30 p.m., they got the RuneScape Lore Marathon. So that's what RuneFest is going to look like, and we're going to cover some of these talks. It'll be very interesting to see
what we do.
Yeah. Yeah.
You need to take that old school update for the next 12 months and put that in place of the RuneScape skilling. At least, 'cause the people would separate anyway. It's like, you know, the old school players can go and do their second stage.
I would actually prefer them to move the Golden Gnomes. I'm not a fan of the Golden Gnomes.
Fair enough. Yeah, because there's no podcasting category. Yeah.
That's right. But there's only two of us, right? There's only two real RuneScape podcasters.
You could switch off every year.
What if you streamed it? You could become streamers. You wouldn't have to have video, would you?
Just have the logo.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
Something.
Shane's face. Or just a drawing of what Shane's face could be.
Well, Clan Quest wanted me to dye my hair blue and stream the podcast next week.
I'm
any
on board
reason
with
that. For
that?
I don't think that's going to happen. Anyways, so that's RuneFest. We will, of course, be talking about RuneFest. Hopefully, I won't reveal any future co-hosts like I did last year during RuneFest. but in any case, a couple of other little RS things before we move on. Double XP weekend has been slotted in for September 15th. We kind of knew it was going to be around that time, and there it is. For 3 days, there doesn't appear to be a tailing off period like there was last year for people, so that's fine. And free to play, get an extra 20% XP boost during this time. So once again, catering to free to play as well, which is good.
Nice.
All right. So before we move on to the
farming, you gonna do some trees?
I feel like I should. I feel like I should, yep. But I haven't in a long time. Long time.
No, you really haven't. No. Did you just stop?
Yeah, I stopped after 120 doing trees.
Disappointing.
Gotta get that 200.
Man. I didn't want to get 200 mil because then I can't train the skill.
I think I've probably gained more farming XP than you since you hit 120.
Wow. That's saying something.
I can't be certain because I don't think I'm on the high scores anymore.
Mm. All right. Well, before we move on, I want to highlight an Informer article that was written this week by Colton. He's starting a new series called NPC Profiles, and this month is The Wise Old Man. So it's kind of a comedic article, but at the same time provides a bit of a history and lore history on the Wise Old Man, the quests he was involved in, and his role in RuneScape. And I just want to highlight this because, you know, it is something I think that the entire RS community, whether or not you listen to this podcast, would get a kick out of because you think the Wise Old Man, I know him from quests, but do you really ever take the time to delve deep into the history of the Wise Old Man? Probably not. And that's what Colton did with this article, and I would really love to share this with the entirety of the RS community. So that's why I'm talking about this now rather than at the tail end of the show, because it's just that important. So you can find that at informer.rsbnb.com. All right. So we have a discussion topic this week sent in by Tycho and another question. So I'll read the discussion topic from Tycho. Sound good?
Yep.
Okie dokie. So with Double XP Weekend announced, there will undoubtedly be many players that are going to work for either 99 or 120 Slayer, as much work as it requires. In an earlier episode, you talked about how personal Slayer dungeons solve this problem. One, but do you really think that this will prevent hotspots from becoming overcrowded? Also, if we look at it from a different perspective, it resembles a lot like Gilded Altars, in that it can only be accessible if you know the name of the owner. Two, do you think that during occasions like this, when Slayer dungeons are in highest demand, it influences Socialscape in a positive way? And finally, three, if you had a Slayer dungeon with creatures you knew was in high demand, how would you reach out to as many people possible so they can use it? Remember, they can enter your dungeon even if you aren't inside. And that's from Tycho Elf from Clan Quest. So, I don't think...
I'm out.
You don't have a Slayer dungeon, and you know.
But, I don't know what this is talking about.
But basically, you could put Slayer creatures of your choosing, if you have 99 Slayer, in your own personal Slayer dungeon now. And you can go fight them without any interruptions from anyone else. So that's what we're talking about here. And I honestly don't think it'll prevent hotspots from being crowded, because the number of people who do not have 99 Slayer is higher than the people who do have more than 99 Slayer at this point, I feel. So I think you're still going to get, you know, the obvious crowding at things like Dark Beasts and Aeriths and Abyssal Demons and the like. So I think if you have 99 plus, it's going to ease off on your crowding a bit if it's something you want to fight for maximum XP. But at the same time, I think that if you're still leveling up to 99, you're still going to feel that pain. I think that's a good summation of this, yes?
Yeah, there might be a small decrease, but
do you have 99 Slayer?
Not too much. Yeah, man.
Okay, how's your Pokedex going?
I think I've got about 50 or so. So, okay. And I've done mainly the lower level ones.
Right.
So got to keep going.
All right. Second one. You think that social occasions like Double XP Weekend help Socialscape in a positive way?
Probably not.
Yeah.
Makes people more angry.
Yeah, I have to agree with this. I mean, even on a good weekend, you can get crashed doing Abyssal Demons, and it's not very pleasant. Mm. So just imagine when there's going to be 15 people fighting for the same spot, right? So I think it can be positive if you're doing it with people that you know and you have managed to take over an entire world with them. But at the same time, you know, I think Double XP Weekend has the potential to bring out a lot of bad stuff in people. So,
I kind of like the idea that that double XP weekends would kind of impact the economy of the game, but it's more than that. It's kind of the lasting effect that has. Does that impact the how you play the game? When you're preparing for a double XP weekend, or the aftermath of a double XP weekend?
Yeah, it does. And I mean, everything starts to shoot up when it comes to skills, and combat stuff comes down. So now,
I like the dynamic aspect of that. I guess I like that it kind of injects something into the game that changes changes how everything just feels for a short time.
Yeah, and I mean, you can get an impeccable amount of XP when you're doing this, and it really has become an event twice a year when they do this, because everyone knows it comes in September and February, and everyone starts saving up in the beginning of August. In fact, I started saving up before this was happening. So I will say that aside from Slayer spots and whatnot, some of the best places to be on a double XP weekend in RuneScape are the Bits Bytes Friends Chat and the Clan Quest Clan Chat.
What a plug.
Well, they are, really. They are, really. Because, I mean, like I said, you can have the entire RS community, which we reach out to, but at the same time, you can have your micro-communities in the terms of clans and friends chats. And, I mean, with everyone focusing in and everyone doing things in some way, you're all kind of on the same kind of mission with that. So,
mate, if I was still playing the game, I wouldn't be wasting time on this chat shit. I'd be grinding so hard.
People do that sometimes.
48 hours.
Sometimes it's also very quiet on double XP weekends because everyone is so busy.
Yeah, yeah.
So, nonetheless, when it comes down to it, it has both positive and negative social scape. And I think if you hang out with the good communities, it can be very positive. But at the same time, if you're going for something in Slayer Tower, then that might not be the case. All right. And regarding the Slayer Dungeon, how would you reach out to as many people as possible so they can use it? Well, I would personally say that you can come and use my Slayer Dungeon on this podcast. That's what I would say.
But since it doesn't exist, that's not going to work.
That's true. but, maybe there's some kind of registry out there for this in the form of a friends chat or something. That you can put yourself into and say what you have in your Slayer Dungeon. Though, I don't know, do you need to be on the task to access someone else's Slayer Dungeon, or can you just get an invite or enter the name?
I have no idea. Well, presumably not, because you can put different creatures in the different rooms,
Like, right. Okay.
Different spawns.
Yeah, and you don't need to be on a task to fight them, okay. So you just need to know the person's name. Right, I remember testing that. Or hearing that was tested. So,
sometime in 2019, type in Shane and you can see his room.
Oh, we're holding me to that, aren't we?
Yeah, we are.
All right. Well, maybe there needs to be some kind of post on an official forum or something like that,
or the Reddit.
Or the RS Wiki.
The RS Wiki, yes.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Tycho. And maybe this is something we could run as a clan project for Slayer Weekend. This might be something worth looking into for people who have 99 Slayer and want to offer it up to people. If you're listening, Tycho, this is something that I am tasking you with to do, since I do not have 99 Slayer. All right. Brad, you want to read the next one from Sorensen?
What do you think of completionist requirements getting locked behind massive grind walls? Examples, 12 hours of temple trekking, 10 hours of livid farm, 30 hours of metaphos fishing, etc. Also, will you or Shane ever go for a completionist cape or a master quest cape for Shane? Also, what's your current favorite food? Let's answer the first one. So I assume that Sorensen is a beast and himself is going for a completionist cape or something.
I think he's had it at one point. So
oh, okay.
I'm assuming
and,
he's...
And now it's locked behind grind walls and...
Yeah, the mess of fishing.
Right.
What kind of fishing?
Yeah, fishing. Fishing's not a good time.
30 hours a minute plus fishing. Is that to get the reputation, is it? I'd assume.
Yeah, right, Menophos.
Ah, 30 hours, yay.
And there's also Daily Soul Obelisk. Oh boy, that is one case of Menophos flashbacks that we are not enjoying. That reputation system.
Oh, it's hard to really answer this, but... Yeah, maybe some of the things need to be moved off, like comp cape and then into trimmed cape. Maybe make trimmed harder and make comped a little easier, but I don't know. The comp, no one's going to like that that's got a comp cape.
Yeah, I have to agree with that. I mean, there needs to be some kind of guideline out there, and I think JAGX probably has this internally of how these tasks are as to when something is comp, when something is trim, and when something is master quest. And, you know, there's a classic example of this when the rework to the Castle Wars requirement happened. The initial one was that you had to win 5,000 Castle Wars games. It was changed that you only need to have a certain number of golden tickets now, which you can accomplish with draws. So with that being said, the people were consulted on this and the change was made. So I don't know what the current... I don't know what the current requirements are to bring a change into the game for one of these capes, but I would imagine JAGX has their own internal guidelines for this. So, but, you know, I have to say that when it comes down to grinding, I don't think actual grinding is a good thing to have in these capes, because what's the point at that, with that, right? Like, it's just painful.
Mm. Well, I mean... To be fair, like, you're probably grinding to get 99s in everything anyway.
But it's really not that painful anymore to get 99s.
No, it is a lot easier these days. But still, you've probably been playing the game for a decent amount of time at that point. And, I mean, potentially grinding some of them. That's what we've
done, I guess,
in the past.
I guess,
anyway.
Like, runecrafting, perhaps, would be one.
I don't know. That's a lot of hours though on those things. Yeah. Like 30 hours of fishing, 12 hours of trekking. Blah.
Oh, temple trekking. Yeah. Livid farm. Ugh. Comp cape, definitely not. Master quest cape, one day maybe, after I get 117 dungeoneering through attrition of sinkholes. Because 117 dungeoneering is a requirement for the master quest cape.
Wow. That sucks.
Yeah, it does.
That's lame.
How do people have time to do this? Like, I don't understand.
Yeah, jobs.
I don't know.
Some of us have to do this.
Okay, favorite food. Let's start with you guys.
Oh, I go bread.
Oh, on the spot. I'm a big fan of lasagna.
Oh, yes.
Still, of course.
Yeah. I'm also a big fan of pineapple.
On pizza?
No, not on pizza. No.
What about spaghetti on pizza? What's your opinion on that?
No. Such a political question. I like the specific brand of pineapple chunks. And my flatmates know that I like them very much as well. I used to just like, you know, eat it straight, essentially, like, you know, as dessert or something.
Which is
real bad. There's a lot of sugar in that. But anyway, I'm a big fan of these pineapple chunks. My flatmates know this. So for my birthday earlier this year, they bought out 3 supermarkets worth of the specific type of pineapple chunks.
What?
I came home.
I remember seeing that.
And there was a pyramid of pineapple on my desk. And it was so big that I couldn't use my computer until I, you know, took every can of pineapple.
Oh wow!
Put it on the floor, and they are still sitting here in my room.
So you're sick of them now.
I have a pyramid of pineapple in the corner. I've managed to get through, you know, like maybe 3 tins or something. I don't eat it that much anymore, but it's just a great, great joke.
I seem to remember we brought some of that with us.
Quite possibly.
Yeah.
On our trip?
Yeah. All right. I can't come up with a favorite food. Can I just say a not favorite food?
Yeah, I guess so.
All right. Anything that is remotely creamy or cheese based.
Really? You're not a fan of cheese.
Yep.
That's like all the best foods.
Yeah. No lasagna? What?
Yeah, no lasagna, yeah. I was actually gonna say my current favorite food is probably the fish pie recipe that I'm trying to perfect. I've made it for the last couple of weeks. I make it every Wednesday, and I'm just adjusting it here and there. I want to have my own signature dish.
Fish pie, interesting.
What kind of fish do you put in that?
It's like in a tin. I haven't got the money to get the expensive stuff, but it's some sort of smoked canned tin food. It's a Kiwi dish, so
okay.
Nothing cheap.
All right, that sounds good.
I was going to say, yeah. Do you have fish pies over in Kenyatta?
No. As we have talked before, unless you buy one of these pies that are, essentially a pre-cooked dinner that you microwave, we really don't seem to have those, or I'm just not looking in the right places for them. So.
Yeah, you wouldn't be a fan of mine because I put the a bit of cheese on top.
Fish and cheese.
Yeah.
I don't see that going at all together.
See, we can joke about Kenyatta because he's outnumbered.
Exactly. This whole month he's been outnumbered.
Well, it's something I had to give up, right?
Yeah, that's the one.
All right. Well, there's our foods, and I think that sums up this round of questions nicely, unless there's anything else.
Nope, let's go.
All righty. Well, if you guys want to send your own questions in, update.rsbnb.com/ask. The phone number is 571-57-BNB, 571-572-2632. And we also take direct messages on Twitter. All right. So on to tech news we go. Apple is making some news in regards to the movie market, specifically going directly to the studios to bypass cinema chains. So the headline reads, as Hollywood Apple said to mall rental plan, defying theaters. Now, I don't know. This presumably would be a long time before it got down to you guys down there. But this would obviously start out in the U.S. and move throughout the world if it was successful. But the movie studios and Apples are debating a plan that could see them ignoring the legacy cinema chains and going directly to customers. Two of the largest participators in this would include Warner Brothers and Universal Pictures, and they are reportedly talking with Apple and Comcast to determine a way that they could push ahead with such a plan. The initial round of negotiations has been successful, and the hope was to create a $30 to $50 premium movie download for consumers. The goal is to have films distributed via Apple or Comcast as soon as 2 weeks after they arrive in theaters. The push for this comes from declining DVD sales, and as we talked about last week in Tech News, Walt Disney isn't included in this round of negotiations because they're aiming to create their own streaming service eventually to offer their own content up. So, you see a movie like Dunkirk in theaters, and 2 weeks later it could be available on Apple or your Comcast rental service in order to watch in the comfort of your own home. And they say
$30 to $50.
Yeah, for a rental. Now, here, if you go see a movie in IMAX, it's about $20. If you go see a movie in a standard theater, it's about $15 or $16. I don't know what it is over there, but that's the price to go see a movie. So if you take two people there for a standard movie without IMAX, you got $30. If you go for an IMAX movie, that's about $40, and that's before you purchase any snacks or anything at the movie theater. So. Yeah. You know, you put this in your own mind, you have a good home theater system, you can do this from the comfort of your own home, and you don't need to worry about what time it's going to be at. You just do it whenever you want. And
you can pause it to go to the toilet.
Pause it, right.
Movie theater snacks day like f***ery. Am I right?
That deserves the swear word.
Why? What do you guys have there for price?
Oh, I don't know. I'm thinking like $6 for popcorn or something for a small
drink.
I don't even. I can't remember the last time I bought anything there.
Yeah, it's just... I know regular drinks here are around $4, and I don't even know what the popcorn is. So, I mean, and when you think about it, the movie theaters have kind of been declining over the last number of years because. It's only 3 months now before, you know, a movie is out. You might as well just wait to see it if it's not something that you actually want to see it on the huge screen for, right? So, and you know, another thing I think that they could potentially be going after with this, it doesn't mention it in the article, but I think it's a distinct possibility, is that they want to do this to combat piracy. Because we all know how popular movies are when they first come out and they get pirated, right? So,
yeah, boy.
Yeah, I mean, it's understandable. I don't know, though. I feel like the price will probably drive people away. It'll be hard for people to rationalize a number like that looks so big, like $30 to $50, which kind of makes sense when you think about what you'd be paying at a movie theater for a few people to go to a movie. Mm. But it's still a big number, you know, as a single number.
Right. And if you really wanted to, you can just buy that disc on Blu-ray when it comes out for $20 or less. So.
Yeah.
It also depends on, is this like a one watch thing, or do you have like 24 hours?
It would be probably a similar kind of rental structure, which right now for Apple is you have 30 days to start watching it and 48 hours to finish watching it. Granted, it would probably be a little bit more constrained with the newer titles, but it would probably give you a similar amount of time to watch it, 48 hours, I'd imagine. So, I don't know.
I'll be sad when the day when the theaters disappear, but...
Well, I mean, they're not going to disappear because, I mean, who doesn't want to go see the new Star Trek movie on the big screen, right?
Well, me, but...
How many have there been now? I think I've seen one of them. The first one.
13?
Mm. Wait, what? No, sorry. The new ones.
Oh, three.
Anyway. Three? Yeah. Okay,
three.
That's what I thought. Yeah, I saw the first one.
Okay.
I haven't seen the other two.
Yeah, that one was good. First one was
good.
Who's
going to be seeing the new Star Wars in December?
I will see that.
No.
Shame.
Skip Into Darkness. That's my recommendation. Skip Into Darkness. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens. And you know, it's interesting also that we're starting to hear about this now because Apple is going to be doing its media event in September or October, where they reveal new iPhones, and that's also when they update services like Apple Music and their TV rental stuff as well. So who knows what we'll see?
Indeed.
All right, next story refers to the social network that I've talked about before on the show, known as Gab. So the headline reads from TechCrunch, alt social network Gab has been booted from the Google Play Store for hate speech. So Gab is an upstart Twitter alternative, and it's been banned from the Google Play Store. It also was not approved on the Apple App Store when it was submitted earlier this year. Google says it was removed because the apps, quote, need to demonstrate a sufficient level of moderation. Now, for anyone who browses the internet, you'll know that there is content on all of the major social networks that violate hate speech and outright threaten individuals and people in power. You know, Twitter, Facebook, Reddit, Instagram all have posts like this. TechCrunch actually put together a collection showcasing just how bad it is on all of the other platforms, and they raise the question, you know, that Gab is also asking, is that, you know, if this content is allowed to persist on Twitter, Facebook, and Reddit, and their apps are allowed in both of these stores, what's the difference here? So that's the question that's being asked by all of the people who are covering this with an objective eye, I want to say, because Gab is often referred to as a, quote, alt-right social network or a social network for conservatives, though at its core, Gab was built with the preservation of Western values, individual liberty, and the free exchange of ideas, which is otherwise known as free speech. And what Gab has done with this is they allow you to make an account at gab.ai, and they're encouraging people now to sideload the Android app, which, of course, you can do on an Android smartphone. You can pretty much load any app that you want. You don't need to go through the store. I don't know how easy that is to do. I'm not an Android person. Perhaps you guys can illuminate that for me.
Plot twist, Apple is the one that's being too restrictive here.
Oh, I am well aware of that. I am well aware of that. How easy is it, though, to sideload an
unnecessary
app?
Joke. It is very easy. You just download an APK and hit OK on it.
Okay.
Sign your life away.
Yeah, risk getting a big virus or something.
Yeah.
I have some thoughts on this. I'm not really familiar with Gab besides what you've mentioned to me in the past, but I mean, I think it's relevant to read Google's actual statement on this, which came out following it actually happening. And the statement is, in order to be on the Play Store, social networking apps need to demonstrate a sufficient level of moderation, including for content that encourages violence and advocates hate against groups of people. Blah, blah, blah. Developers have the opportunity to appeal. And the app can be reinstated if they've addressed it, which, you know, unlikely to actually happen, given that that's Gab's whole thing.
But the thing I think here is that, well, there's two things. The first one is that, you know, if there are outright threats on the network, they are removed by the site staff. And Gab is promoted as being self-moderating in that if you don't like something you see, you're the one that mutes that user and you don't have to see it. Unless that is a little bit too far for Google, then that might be the rationale they have for removing it. But at the same time,
so,
Twitter and whatnot also has the same problem on their platform, but
yeah,
Google
doesn't
do anything with it.
I'm assuming this is something that a lot of people, you know, Gab is probably just something that you use and you wouldn't see the worse sides of it,
right? Unless you actually went looking for it, right?
Yeah,
it's kind of like 4chan being on the
well-intentioned
internet, right?
Yeah, sure. I mean, that's an accurate comparison. 4chan is a cesspool of hatred and bigotry. Would you agree, Shane?
Yes.
I mean, I wouldn't automatically say the same thing about Gab. It probably is not, but it could be. You know, certain parts of it. I don't know. In the same way that Facebook, you know, quite likely could be. There's nothing stopping people from spouting whatever bullshit they want to on there, but you know, unless they make it completely public and then they get reported and whatnot. But I'm guessing that this is all following the Charlottesville events and whatnot. It's kind
of
not
surprising. Downright horrible.
Yeah.
So, and the thing is, what I would like to see come from this is I would like to see a unified stance on this. If this is what Google's policy is and it results in the app being removed, then Twitter, as being, you know, one of the huge companies on the internet, for example, just choosing them, Facebook can do it also. There should be perhaps more moderation on those platforms as well, because there are at some points in the day just downright horrible things trending on those platforms that are allowed to trend. So.
Yeah, perhaps. I mean, what's an example?
I don't know what the solution is to this. Yesterday there was a trending topic on Twitter calling for the assassination of the U.S. president.
Right. Yeah, which is extreme. That's treason, right?
It is a felony in the U.S. to threaten the president. And see, this is the thing. It's a question of this being applied equally. If we want to remove apps who are doing this, let's moderate Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Reddit, and all of these other things. And rather than just going after the easy upstart app, right? And, you know, in some ways, this is why the platform went web first. And I think, shows the freedom that you can get on the web. But I think we're getting away from the core aspect of the story here, in that this initially just started off as a removal from the store. And the question, I think, is what goes further for this? And is this a jumping off point for other platforms? Or does the vast majority of people out there even care about this?
I would, to that last question, I would say no. Yeah. This does not impact me whatsoever.
Right. And I think the point I wanted to make with this...
I think this is more of a political move, right?
Yes, it sounds like that.
Exactly with the Google memo, they couldn't sit idly by and do nothing because the overwhelming response from the internet was that it was a terrible
oh,
thing.
Yeah. And, you know, I agree with their stance to fire the engineer who made that memo. And I think it could have been went around with a better way if he wanted to do that, which if you're employed by Google, it's a huge company. You don't go out there and do that and post something publicly that is meant to be private internally. So,
well, I think it was private internally.
Yes, but it got out.
Blown out of proportion.
So.
Yeah, I think, but still, yes, you're right. It could still have been handled completely differently. Yeah, so I mean,
I'm not even concerned personally about the removal of the app because I'm not on Android and there has never been an iOS version of the app. I don't even use the network that much myself. I just think it sets a dangerous precedent going forward for what these platforms stand for. And people need to be aware that even on the open platform of Google, your app can be removed. So,
yeah, for sure.
Yeah. All right, I'm going to move us on to the next tech news story, which talks about the Nintendo Switch. So, you guys fans of the Nintendo Switch at all?
Nope.
No.
PS4.
Okay. Well, I got news then for you, because last month, the Nintendo Switch outsold both the PS4 and the Xbox One in July. And store stock of the Switch has also been increased over the last month, which contributed to these numbers. Splatoon 2 was the console's top-selling game last month and has been moved into the category of being a system seller, which of course means that people are often buying a Switch in order to play Splatoon 2, which on its own looks like a pretty simple game, but can be pretty fun. So year over year, also hardware spending in the game industry is up 20% over 2016 values, and Nintendo also has the Super Nintendo Classic Edition coming out this holiday season, which could make this year for Nintendo a very positive year in terms of holiday sales. And, you know, it's excellent news for the Switch because this was probably one of Nintendo's last chances to build a compelling hardware device and have it sell reliably after the Wii U, and just the fact that so many people are focused on the PS4 and Xbox One at this point in terms of console gaming, I think. So all in all, very successful for the Nintendo Switch and Nintendo as a whole, which, like Nintendo or not, Nintendo needs to be successful, and it would be really unfortunate if one of the pioneers of video game consoles was not successful in one of the products that they launched. So I'm very pleased with this.
Yeah. Are you going to get one of these, Shane?
Probably not. I don't have a need to have a computer and have an Xbox for console gaming when people come over and an old Wii that still works. So I don't see the point right now. Maybe in a few years. I don't know if the Wii dies. How about you guys?
Yeah. Nah, not for me. My friend just bought one, though, so I need to go over there and play it, actually.
Yeah.
Me.
Apparently the new Mario Kart game is pretty fun.
Yeah, they look good.
Mario Kart, Super Smash Brothers, and perhaps something on the lines of Mario Party or Wii Party would be requirements for a Switch for me. But we'll just wait and see if that happens. How about you, Brett?
Indeed.
PC Master Race, mate.
Okay.
Oh, God.
Let's not start
I just don't have interest in consoles.
Okay. Let's not start any other flame wars here. Not that we started any, but anyways. All right. Moving on to the what is a very lethargic skill of the month still. Jamandy 52 still in first place with 65 million XP gained. X-Blades in second with 7.2 6 in Parnassius, still in third with 4.8 in the invention skill of the month. Yeah. You can tell people love training invention, right?
Yeah, definitely. Gee. That is so much XP.
Oh, yeah.
Good on them.
All righty. Well, on to achievements of the week we go. We have a true load of achievements this week. So I'll get us started with August 17th and Ms. Conan getting 99 strength. I Like Slayer also got 99 smithing on that day. Punisher 1288 with 99 magic. Moving on to the 16th, we got Rotatoes with 99 fishing. Interesting name there. Eve Shaba with 99 Slayer on the 15th. PTV Sully with 99 magic. Magic King with 99 magic also on the 15th. 82nd Airborne with 200 million thieving XP hit on the 15th. Congratulations there. And Magic King once again with 99 summoning on August 15th.
You said that Magic King got 99 magic, and I was like, are you sure? I'm pretty sure Magic King probably already has 99 magic, given the name.
He got 99 smithing. Whoops.
That's right.
Thank you for the correction.
Thought it sounded weird. A few more. So on August the 14th, Tosol's Cool got 120 invention. Eve Shaba got 99 range. And then on August the 13th, Catmac got 99 cooking. Wheezy Baby got 99 fishing. And Fire Mana got 99 prayer. I recognized a couple of names in there.
Yeah.
Fire Mana and Magic King. Those are foreign people,
Fire
right?
Mana,
I'm sure everyone
King,
else are
Punisher
foreign people
1288.
Too,
but... Yeah. Yeah. Lots of old school names on there. All right, Mr. RMN, have fun with this next list.
All right, Kexi. Well, if you ever want to know what all the RuneScape skills are, this is just about all of them. Ready to go. On the 12th of August, Kexi got 99 cooking, 99 farming, 99 magic, 99 fire making, 99 smithing, 99 hunter, 99 woodcutting, 99 dungeoneering, 99 construction. Sorry. 99 rune crafting.
Do you want to let us know when you're halfway?
Yeah, I'm getting there. I'll just have a breath. Like 99 crafting, 99 prayer, 99 divination, 99 thieving, 99 attack, 99 ranged, 99 herb lore, 99 strength, 99 fletching, 99 mining, 99 fishing, 99 defense, 99 agility, and 99 summoning. That's hardcore. And don't forget, Phoebes, he got 120 fishing on August 11th.
Very nice. Good job, everyone. And we did read, I think that was 24 of the 27 RS skills that are currently out there.
Oh, wow. So that's missing hit points.
Invention.
What is it? Constitution. Invention, yeah.
And one more. Everybody's just looking at us like, what is that last skill?
Slayer.
Slayer. Ah, yes. Well played.
All right. Good achievements, everyone. I believe you have a pick of the week for us, Brad.
I do. So there's a funny story about this particular podcast recording. So Shane approached me earlier in the week to do this. Obviously, I said, yep, sure. The next day or something... It's only been a few days, so you know, a couple of days ago, my microphone on my headset started to stop working. So it was kind of like it's one of those retractable ones in the headset, and so it was like there was a loose connection in there. So sometimes it was kind of working, and then I managed to get to work one night and putting it in the perfect position, and then the next night it just wasn't working at all. So I have no idea. It just broke very quickly in the space of a couple of days. So as of last night, I had no working microphone. I was using my webcam microphone for a bit for talking to friends last night, but that was just picking up all of my typing, and it was horrible. Decided I couldn't deal with that. So first thing this morning, recording the podcast, which was going to be at 10 o'clock, I rocked on down to PB Tech, which opens at 10 o'clock, managed to pick myself up a new headset, which was actually recommended to me through Shane from Reed, as in Earth Reed. And so I've got myself now a SteelSeries Arctis 7, which is a wireless headset, which is super cool because the last one I had was also a SteelSeries 1, which was a SteelSeries Siberia headset, and it's so that was on the sort of the cheap side. I think that one cost me $100 New Zealand, and this new one that I've got now is wireless. The other one wasn't. This new one was 250-ish New Zealand dollars, so a lot more expensive. But I am at the point in my life when I can justify spending that much money on a headset now that I've actually got, you know, working computer equipment. And yeah, so yeah, this is I've been using this for about 2 hours now, and this is really nice. I love it so much. I just the fact that it's wireless is so cool. It apparently has 24 hours of battery life. It is like I these guys would be able to verify that, you know, beginning of the podcast, I kind of like moved around in my chair and I just had this reflex movement where I went to go and get the cord out of the way and there was no cord there. I was like, oh my God. This is
and don't forget the little run, when you were coming back from the store before.
Oh, I mean, that's unrelated, right? But unrelated to the actual headset. But I was coming back from the store, and I was late, obviously, at this point. I kind of asked Shane, you know, 10:30, will that be okay? I think I can make it to the store and back by then. And it was getting on 11 o'clock by the time I actually did manage to get back. So anyway, I was just in the car, and I've got Bluetooth in my car, so I decided to give them a quick call over Skype to make sure that they knew I was on my way. And so that was cool. And I called them, came through the speakers in my car, and I started talking to them. Apparently my microphone quality was terrible. I ended up ending the call, and then all I heard was this laughter coming from my phone. And for some reason, the call hadn't actually ended properly. And you guys could still hear me. And the microphone quality got better too?
Yep.
Yeah? Which seems really weird. So I don't know what the heck it did, but that's my story.
And that is what goes into producing and recording this episode of RSVNB Update, which is a little bit later than I had intended, but hey.
Of preparation.
The things people will do for this podcast.
Oh, you'd be surprised.
Yeah, but anyway, very, very good headset. Highly recommend it. It seems to be good quality. I mean, you guys can be.
Yeah, it sounds good.
That's the microphone. Very good. It fits on my head perfectly. I really, really like the SteelSeries design, where they don't have a kind of adjustable headband. It's more of a stretchy. They've probably got some word for it. I don't know what it is, but it's a one size fits all type thing, and it seems to fit my head perfectly. Some people have issues with it, but it works really well for me. That was me just knocking the microphone. Sorry.
All right. So what have we been up to? Let's start with you, Brad. Anything gaming related or otherwise you'd like to share with the podcast community since you haven't been on RS?
I have been playing a lot of PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Initially thought it looked like a terrible game. Never was really interested in games like DayZ or H1Z1, those sorts of things, but which is what I thought it looked like. But it's very good. I very quickly changed my mind about that. So highly recommend. Even though I have a GTX 1080 and it can't sustain 60 FPS half the time.
Really?
Needs some optimization, but it's a good game nonetheless.
Wow.
I think it might be CPU bound or something, unsure. Other than that, I have been working hard as usual. I'm actually starting a new job in October. Good times.
Didn't mean to cut you off.
Yeah, no, that's me.
Alrighty. How about you, RR Man? What about this week, RS-wise? And
a lot more wood cutting. Still heading for that 120. Been doing a few dailies, you know, but mostly been still on the Elite Dangerous kick, flying the ships around.
You should try some of that crystallized Acadia.
Yes, you actually got me kind of keen to go over there. Mix it up a bit.
Yeah, I mean, hey, Manifos came out. We might as well use it for something, right?
Yeah, I guess I'll get that rip up eventually.
Yeah. Do all the quests, unlock the soul altar, and have some fun with that.
Quests. No worries.
Yeah, quests. Come on. You'll do them eventually.
One day.
Anything else?
Nah, that's about it, eh?
Alrighty. This week for me on RS, I have been AFK in construction at the beach event. And prior to that, just did the weekly clue scroll. And, of course, figured out the chat box this week. So, yeah, not too much on it. RS, it'd be interesting to see what happens when the achievement system finally arrives. I think we're all looking forward to that one, aren't we?
Very much. Should be next week, hopefully.
Yeah. Yeah, either that or the next week. So fingers crossed on that. And aside from that, not too much. So that does us for this episode of RSBNB Update. Thank you both for being here and chatting about RS expansions and otherwise, headsets, Gab, movies, you name it. So with that being said, we'll see you next week. And thank you for sharing your time with us, everyone.
See you later.